Good afternoon and welcome to Quality of Life, the radio show. And this is sponsored by Quality of Life Medical and Research Center here in Tucson, Arizona. And it's co-hosted by Dr. Jack McGettigan. Hello, Jack.
Good afternoon, Ron.
And I'm Ron Zack. I'm an attorney and a nurse practitioner, and I work at Ronald Zack Law, and I also work some at Quality of Life Medical Center, taking care of patients. We're also here with Veronica Sternitsky. Hey, Veronica.
Hello.
And we bring you information regarding medicine, medical issues, health issues, and legal information too. We kind of combine the two. So Veronica is an attorney, as I am. And you can join our conversation at 520-790-2040. But first, we like to begin the show with some news, some legal news and medical news you can't use. This is useless and uninformative information that that you can listen to and won't do you any good. And Veronica is bringing us the news. Veronica.
Absolutely. So stretching my mandate a little bit, I found some very interesting stories. You know, we just recently passed a very important anniversary. So November 12th is the anniversary of the 90 years since the first sighting of the Loch Ness Monster.
And were you there?
I was not, but the pictures were very grainy and very interesting.
The more recent pictures are better.
Yes, absolutely. Apparently, since that time, there's been over 1,155 official sightings, but no definition of what official means.
Okay, that's useless.
On the same kind of animal theme, apparently in Ladisopoli near Rome in Italy, a lion escaped from the zoo and was loose for over 5 hours. The townspeople were told to stay in their homes, and eventually police and zoo personnel were able to subdue the lion and make sure everyone was safe.
Do they add on time for lions that escape and get caught?
I don't know. I do know, however,
that is a legal question.
I do know they were told that at that point their permit to perform in the city was going to be reconsidered.
Gotcha.
So slightly different topic. A Boeing 787 recently landed at a runway in Antarctica, a blue ice runway. What do you think, Doctor? Do you want to do that?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind trying it. I'm not sure how I would get there.
Well, it was a Norse airline carrying, 50-some-odd passengers for the local research station, and it is the first time that particular type of aircraft has landed on a blue ice runway.
I could try taking my plane there, but I'd need to be refueled in the air, and I have not done that one yet.
Something about Dr. McGettigan and a 747 brings to mind the phrase ramp strike.
Strike?
The Navy guys will get it.
So, shifting towards some more science-based news.
Finally.
So, two PhD students at Rice University have managed to find a use for dead spiders. They are taking dead spiders and using compressed air to turn them into grabbers who can be lowered down to grab very small objects.
I had a use for dead spiders, but then my sister moved out.
So apparently there is a time limit on how long these dead spiders are useful, though when their blood finally hardens and ceases being a liquid, they can no longer be made to act as little grabbers to pick things up.
Hmm.
Wonder what a little spider could pick up that What did they use them for? What were they picking up?
Their theories were small things like wires or threads in difficult to reach places.
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah. So an Australian woman was recently charged with three murders for cooking with poisonous mushrooms. Apparently, she made a series of meals using poisonous mushrooms that caused at least five people to die and others to become exceedingly sick. Although she did eat her own poisonous mushrooms, so I think there's a reasonable question about how much she meant to do. So I will keep an eye out for that to bring up.
I would defend her.
Absolutely. So the world's oldest dog, Bobby, B-O-B-I, recently died in Portugal.
How old?
31 years old.
Yikes.
What kind of dog?
It was, let's see here.
Old.
It was a purebred Raffaello Alentejano. I'm sorry, I don't speak Portuguese. But it lived 31 years, 165 days.
So what is that in people years?
I have no idea. What is that, multiplied by seven?
Methuselah.
Dogzilla. Apparently, the family members, I guess owners of this dog, calculated out that it had lived 11,478 days.
It's a lot of dog food.
It is. Slightly different animals. So, Colombia, the state of Colombia, is dealing with a problem regarding hippopotamuses. Hippopotami? Whatever the plural is.
Hippopotami, I think.
And they've now had to start sterilizing hippopotami who have escaped from what was Pablo Escobar's private drug-fueled zoo into the local rivers.
What kind of zoo was that again?
Well, it was a drug-fueled zoo.
Drug-fueled?
Well, the drugs paid for the zoo.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, there are over 40 hippos that are planned to be sterilized this year. And rather than being euthanized or put down, they're sterilizing them and allowing them to live out their lives.
Okay.
A new mission for quality of life.
On another animal front, dolphins have been recorded consuming intoxicants. Apparently, these dolphins have found a way to bother a puffer fish just enough to get it to release a little teeny bit of its poison, which they consume. The report went on to say that the dolphins apparently like to head to the surface of the water and will just stare at the surface. It was postulated they may be staring at their own reflection.
Dolphins are smartest people.
Although in a wonderful sense of camaraderie, the dolphins did share the pufferfish. And after they bothered it to consume some of its poison, they passed it off to another dolphin. So it's a social activity.
Very much like people.
A less social animal was found in the sewers in Florida, a large alligator, which apparently was causing problems with the sewer. Repair workers sent in a robot who unfortunately was not able to remove the alligator. It was only scared further down the pipe. You know, I'd heard of sewers filled with alligators in New York, but I didn't know that was a common thing in Florida.
I never heard of it in New York myself, but
they come out of the toilet.
I think I'm following the wrong news sources.
No doubt.
Clearly.
And a ringing endorsement for the productivity of the government, a Michigan woman recently received a 100-year-old postcard. Apparently, it was sent to family members who had owned the house before her and was postmarked October 29th, 1920.
Wow. Well, Veronica, thank you very much.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
After our break, we're going to be talking with a physician, a preventive cardiologist, Elizabeth Clotus, with some startling information about cholesterol and managing cholesterol and statins and a lot of questions. So feel free to call us at 520-790-2040. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Quality of Life Radio Show, hosted by Dr. Jack McGettigan from Quality of Life Medical and Research Clinic, the sponsor of the show, and Ronald Zak from Ronald Zak Law and Quality of Life Medical Center, and Veronica Sternitsky, often always with us, hopefully, and she's from Ronald Zak Law as well. We have on the line Dr. Elizabeth Clotus, who's, you know, as I had said before the break, a cardiologist and a preventive cardiologist. And so we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about what she's preventing and how. Welcome, Dr. Clotus. Thank you so much for calling and being patient.
Oh, thanks for having me. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. It's great to be here. And so you're a cardiologist, but a preventive cardiologist. So what do you do as a preventive cardiologist that's different from other heart doctors?
Yeah, so my training is the same. So I by background, I've been in practice for 25 years. So that tells you a little bit about my age. But I trained at Mayo and Johns Hopkins, the regular cardiology fellowships, you know, went through the cath lab, echocardiograms, stress tests, things like that. So I learned all of that. But as time has gone on, I've really kind of gone backwards, so to speak, in the disease process and try to prevent the need for all of those procedures in the first place. And, you know, the sad truth is that 80% of heart disease need not exist. That's not a wish. That's not a, you know, like a me, you know, putting that out into the universe. This is a known fact. The CDC says that there, you know, 80% of heart disease need not exist, and yet it is our number one killer. Heart disease has topped the list of killers of Americans since statistics were being kept. In fact, this is interesting. American Heart Association was formed in 1924 by six cardiologists with the goal of eradicating heart disease. And why did they form the American Heart Association? Because heart disease was the number one killer of Americans. And it stayed like that, with the exception of a couple of world wars. It has stayed like that every single year. COVID, not an exception either.
So since at least 1924, that's been the number one cause of death.
Yes, even before that. But that's mm-hmm. when the American Heart Association was formed. Wow. Because it was our number one killer. Yeah, and it's an 80% of it need not exist. And I'm, you know, I'm trying to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
So is that's in the United States? Is the United States mm-hmm. unique in that way?
Unfortunately, heart disease is becoming the number one killer of people on the globe. Okay. So
that's comforting.
It's really a Yeah, so we're not so unique, unfortunately, but we do lead a lot of the statistics. And, you know, honestly, it's all, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, but a lot of this is, I mean, it's a lifestyle-driven disease, and especially a nutrition-driven disease. And as we export our wonderful food systems around the world, we create the diseases that we have here in other communities.
Okay. Now we're our time is limited. We're gonna have you for a while, but just so people who are listening who might not be able to hear the whole thing, do you have information on a website that they can go to?
Oh, sure. So the best place to get information about what we talk about today and additional educational resources is steponefoods.com. O-N-E is spelled out, so the one is spelled out, steponefoods, it's plural.com. I do a weekly blog, so I write about various prevention topics. We did a clinical trial around food and lowering cholesterol with foods, that people can find out more information about that there. So it's a pretty rich resource, and if you go into the blog section, you'll see it just goes on and on and on with information.
Excellent. And so I've looked at I read a little booklet that you have on your website. Mm-hmm. And so you talk about cholesterol and why cholesterol is such a big factor. Do you think that's the biggest factor in this 80% that could be avoided?
Yeah, it's one of the factors, right? It is one of the best studied factors that contributes to heart disease. So heart disease doesn't happen because of one thing. It happens because of many things, right? High cholesterol, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, diabetes, smoking, inactivity, excess weight, poor diet, a lot of factors that come together. Some of these are easier to manage than others. Right? It's hard to become physically fit. It's easy to take a medication to lower cholesterol, right? So there's kind of a spectrum of things that are easy to do to reduce risk and things that are harder. But if you sort of lift the hood and kind of look at what's going on, the vast majority of risk factors, so high cholesterol, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, diabetes, excess weight, poor diet, that's five of them, five major risk factors. These are all related to food. So if you make dietary changes, you can have marked impacts on health risk, health outcomes, and longevity, healthy longevity, which is what this is really all about. It's living long well.
And
that's all about the food.
So the food is addressing more than just the cholesterol.
Absolutely. This is the magic of making dietary changes, because as food is a complex, comprehensive solution, right? And if you're eating right for cholesterol, as it turns out, you're also eating right for blood pressure, for blood sugar, for weight management, right? Obviously, and if you're eating right, your diet's improving. So you, in one fell swoop, you address multiple risk factors for heart disease.
Well, I'm so glad you're not suggesting exercise, but Charles has a question for you.
Dr. Close, this is the producer. On a scale of 1 to 10, how bad are things like certain fried foods? Like something comes to mind, like it's real common, like Kentucky Fried Chicken. Not a steady diet of it, but how bad is an occasional one of those?
So, a rare visit to Kentucky Fried Chicken is not going to be the end of the world. It is the common consumption of these foods, right? So if you're eating out, if you're eating fast food, once a week, twice a week, three times a week, it's not that it's like once a quarter. This is like a steady part of your diet. It is really toxic to your metabolism and your health for multiple reasons. Number one, these foods tend to be very high in sodium, which will raise your blood pressure. They tend to be very high in saturated fats, which will increase your cholesterol levels. They tend to be very high in calories, so you're going to gain weight, which will predispose you to becoming diabetic. And they're pro-inflammatory. And all the things that we are trying to avoid, the big three, heart disease, cancer, dementia, these are all caused in part by inflammation. So we don't want to be throwing gasoline on the fire. We want to be tamping that down. So really reducing these fast foods, these junk foods, is vital if we're going to have a fighting chance at living long well.
Sorry, Charles.
Colonel Sanders will be after you.
So, one of the things that I noticed when I was doing that the reading from your website was, yeah, you talk when you're looking at cholesterol and you talk a lot about cholesterol, you look specifically at LDL. Can you explain that and why?
Sure. So when people get a cholesterol profile checked, they typically get four numbers. One is the total cholesterol, another one is HDL, another one is LDL, and last one is triglycerides. So total cholesterol is the sum of the other three, LDL, HDL, and triglycerides. And you can have various combinations of those three and get to the same total number with very different health implications. So I generally don't look too much at the total. The LDL and HDL are the more important particles of the three. HDL is the good cholesterol. It's happy cholesterol. You want to keep it high. This is cholesterol that's not depositing in your arteries. It's on its way out. So you actually want this number as high as possible. HDL should be over 40 in men and over 50 in women. If it's under that, it's a significant risk factor for heart disease. Okay, LDL, that's the one we really focus on for treatment. LDL, lousy cholesterol, you want to keep it low. LDL is the cholesterol that's potentially depositing in our arteries, so we really want to lower this number as much as possible. Most cardiologists would say that everybody's LDL should be under 130 as you accumulate risk factors, and that might be high blood pressure, smoking history, family history of heart disease. We'd like to see that closer to 100. Once you have documented heart or vascular disease, so you've had a heart attack, stroke, bypass, surgery, stent, that LDL should fall under 70. And there's even data to show that under 50 is additionally protective. So the main message around LDL is the lower, the better. Triglycerides are the last component. They actually are not that much of a cholesterol particle. They're mostly a fatty particle. So actually, when you're doing that formula, LDL, HDL, triglycerides to get you to the total, we only count one-fifth of the triglycerides in that formula. So triglycerides are more of a measure of fat in the bloodstream, and they should be under 150.
Okay. And what about, I hear a lot of talk or research about other fractional parts of cholesterol.
Cholesterol, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting when you look at the number. So I'm just going to pick a number out of the air. So let's say your LDL is 130. Okay. The units for that is mg per dl, milligrams per deciliter. Well, mg, milligram, is a unit of weight. dl, deciliter, is a unit of volume. So what I can say is that if I drew a deciliter of blood out of your arm, I scraped out the LDL, and I put it on a scale, it would weigh 130 milligrams. Like, huh? What does that mean? Well, the main point of that is that LDL is not one type of particle. It's a family of particles. There's small particles, big particles, and everything in between. And that 130 milligrams tells me nothing about whether, you know, that 130 is made up of small particles, big particles, or what the makeup is of that at all. And what you don't want is a whole bunch of small particles. Why? Because you need a lot more of them to add up to 130 milligrams, which means you have a lot more particles circulating in your bloodstream. That means statistically more likely to bump into an artery wall. Oh, and by the way, they're smaller, so they're more likely to get incorporated into plaque or that buildup of gunk in arteries. So that's why you don't want a whole bunch of small LDL particles. So we can measure that. That's called an advanced lipid profile. It's more expensive. It's not used in routine care, but it can be useful in some patients if we're making therapeutic decisions about statins and food and things like that.
And I also hear, and we'll need a break in a minute, but I hear about a ratio that people refer to.
Yeah, it's typically the HDL to cholesterol ratio, so total cholesterol divided by HDL, and that ratio should be under 4, and that basically means that that most of that total cholesterol is in the HDL form, right? So either your total cholesterol is low and your HDL is normal, right? Or your total cholesterol is a bit higher, but your HDL is really high, mm-hmm. and that gives you a better ratio. So that it's just another way to kind of say, like, huh, there's probably less LDL.
Ah, thank you so much. Great clarification. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with you. Okay, doctor? Welcome back. You're listening to Quality of Life, a radio show sponsored by Quality of Life Medical and Research Clinic. And we're talking with Dr. Elizabeth Clotus a lot about cholesterol, about heart disease. And I think Veronica has a question.
Absolutely, Dr. Clotus. I think I am the only person in this conversation who isn't a medical person. So could you just give me an idea, what is cholesterol?
Oh, yeah. So cholesterol is waxy, fatty-type substance that is primarily produced in our bodies. We absorb some of it from our food, but it's mostly produced in our bodies, and it has various functions. We make cell walls with it. We make hormones with it. We make bile with it. So it has many different uses inside our body. The problem is most of us have too much cholesterol circulating around in our bloodstream, and that cholesterol has to find a place to park, and that ends up being in our arteries. So excess cholesterol leads to blockages and buildup of plaque in arteries.
Okay, so that gives some context for why there are multiple kinds of cholesterol then. Thank you. That very much helps me.
Yeah.
So you said that it doesn't come from what we eat, or not much from what we eat. Of course, other bad things happen with Charles and his bucket of chicken over there. But
everybody needs a little KFC.
But so if diet isn't really a factor so much in cholesterol.
Oh, no. Diet is incredibly important. It's just that the cholesterol in food is not the major driver of cholesterol in our bloodstream. It's actually the types of carbohydrates we eat and the types of fats we eat and the complex interplay that has with our biochemistry. So you know, eating a lot of simple carbohydrates, so sweets, highly processed foods, you know, like Rice Krispies instead of brown rice. Right?
It's like you've done your research about me.
that leads to high sugar levels, which leads to high insulin levels. And insulin is a storage hormone. It shifts our body into storage mode. What's the storage form of cholesterol? LDL. LDL levels go up when insulin levels are high. So you can end up with very high, bad cholesterol levels when you eat a lot of sugar, even though you might not eat a lot of fat or cholesterol. So sugary, easily digested carbohydrates will lead to elevated cholesterol levels. Saturated fats, those are solid at room temperature. They come primarily from animal sources, so butter, cheese, the marbling in beef, the fat in chicken. Saturated fats impair LDL receptor function. So in order for cholesterol to be used for all the things I talked about them, it being used, like making bile and cell walls and hormones, it has to get into the cell to be used for that purpose. And that requires a receptor to grab the cholesterol and bring it inside the cell. Well, that receptor is basically it's made less active by a bunch of saturated fat. Saturated fat down-regulates LDL receptors, so they become less active. And so you keep LDL floating around in the bloodstream. So it's much more complex. cholesterol in food, eventually, yes, you can overwhelm the system and cause a lot of cholesterol to be absorbed, but that is not the main thing. If people are going to worry about anything, they should worry about the saturated fats and the simple carbs in their diets, not the cholesterol.
And you mentioned in the reading that I was doing that there were four foods to be concerned with, and it was fiber, plant sterols, complex carbohydrates, and certain polyunsaturated fats.
So these are nutrients or dietary components that help bring down cholesterol. So fiber helps kind of trap cholesterol in the digestive system and escort it out as part of a cholesterol circulation we have that happens through the liver and bile. So we trap cholesterol in the digestive system and escort it out with fiber. Plant sterols compete with cholesterol absorption, reabsorption. Plant sterols are natural plant components that are found in all whole plant-based foods. Omega-3 fatty acids are healthy fats. They're liquid at room temperature. They come from fish, from flax, from chia, walnuts, things like that. And they help lower LDL cholesterol and also raise HDL and lower triglycerides. So they give you an overall more beneficial cholesterol profile. And then antioxidants are these free radical fighting ninjas that you can find, again, in whole plant-based foods. And what's interesting is that for cholesterol to be incorporated into cell walls, into artery walls, it has to be oxidized. So it has to be in this oxidated state. Well, antioxidants prevent that from happening. So any LDL or any cholesterol that's circulating around in your bloodstream is a little less toxic when you have a whole bunch of antioxidants on board. And these are all things that are available to us through food. Now, it can be complicated to get all this stuff in the right amounts to actually have an impact on your cholesterol, which is the whole idea behind Step One Foods and why I started this whole effort, because you can, you know, you give people recipes and, you know, send them to grocery stores, but to do that is like really hard to, you know, the right ingredients in the right amounts and the right, you know, at the right intervals to actually impact cholesterol. You have to really know what you're doing. So Step One Foods just makes it easy. It's like, okay, just eat this, right? It's already in the right amounts, in the, you know, in the right formats, just twice a day, and you'll be good. You'll fill all those, you know, you'll fill all your deficiencies, quote unquote, I'm making air quotes here, of those four important nutrients for cholesterol management.
So tell us about Step One Foods.
Yeah, so Step One Foods is really a line of snacks that are created to help lower cholesterol levels naturally. So these aren't drugs, these are foods, by really targeting the root cause of cholesterol, which is diet, right? And like we just talked about, most of us don't get enough fiber, omega-3 fatty acids, plant sterols, or antioxidants to keep cholesterol in a healthy range. But figuring out how to fill those gaps is really confusing, so it's really about taking all the guesswork out with just eating two servings a day. And it's not just me saying that this, you know, this is like a good idea. We've actually subjected this method and these foods to rigorous clinical testing, the sort of, you know, scientific scrutiny you'd subject a pharmaceutical to, which is called a randomized controlled clinical trial. We did that with Mayo Clinic and University of Manitoba and found that, you know, with people basically doing very little different, you know, just having a couple of snacks a day, they were able to lower their LDL, bad cholesterol, on average by 9%. 9%. If I lower the average LDL of the U.S. population by 9%, I will finally dethrone heart disease as our number one killer. It is actually that significant from a public health perspective. But what's really interesting to me, because I don't treat a whole public, I treat people one at a time in my practice, and I see people who can't take cholesterol-lowering drugs, don't want to take them, you know, can't get to their cholesterol goals despite maximum tolerated doses of medications like statins, you know, Lipitor, Crestor, is that there are individuals who can see 20, 30, close to 40% LDL reductions with food in 30 days, right? You're not even committing to doing this for 6 months. You just do this for 30 days and you can see a significant cholesterol reduction. It's amazing. It's amazing.
About step one, there is a caller who has a question for you. So we'll talk with Mark, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and finish on step one. Mark, thank you for calling.
Yes. So one of my four food groups are ice cream and
donuts.
About 10 years ago, when I wasn't all that, you know, with it, with my diet and all that, I had one of those, artery, what do you call it?
Calcium test? Calcium test?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yep. Calcification test, whatever it was. And I figured, it'd come back pretty high. And it came back with a rating of 0, which meant there was nothing in it. And I couldn't believe that. I'm wondering why that would be when I didn't have a superb diet, things like that.
Yeah, and can I ask, Mark, how old are you?
Well, back then, I'm 64 now, but back then, that's probably close to mid-50s, close to 10 years ago.
Mid-50s when you had the test?
Yes.
Mid-50s, yeah, okay. Yeah, so, so first of all, that's awesome. A 0 calcium score is associated with a very favorable near-term prognosis. So that's awesome. Your risk of dropping over dead, having a heart attack, requiring bypass surgery, needing a stent, anything like that, is essentially 0. There's no perfect guarantees in medicine, but this comes pretty close. And that guarantee is, it's for not just for a couple of weeks, it's for the next 3 to 5 years. Now, that guarantee eventually runs out, so it's not a forever, but gives you a pretty good runway. The calcium in heart arteries is part of the process. It's not the very first thing that happens, that calcification. It's kind of the body's response and kind of self-healing response to try and manage this. And calcium is a hard substance. That's why it's called hardening of the arteries. And so that's why calcium ends up depositing there. But that's not the very first thing. So you can have soft plaque that won't show up on a coronary calcium scan because it hasn't calcified yet. So here's my main point. Number one, 0 calcium score, awesome. You're in a low-risk group. You can, look at any risk factors that you have. You can approach from a lifestyle first without having to, put yourself on a, little pharmacy store worth of drugs. However, it's still important to look after those risk factors because they can catch up with you. Like I said, that guarantees only for, 3 to 5 years. And if your diet remains poor, especially if your cholesterol profile is abnormal, your blood pressure is kind of borderline, I would repeat that test and make sure you're still staying in that low risk group.
Sounds like good advice. We're gonna need to take a break. Mark, thanks so much for calling. We'll be right back, and we're gonna finish up with Dr. Clotus. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Quality of Life Radio Show. This is your co-host, Ronald Sack, from Ronald Sack Law and Quality of Life Medical and Research Clinic. Co-host Dr. Jack McGettigan is here, and Veronica Sternitsky, attorney at law and newscaster.
We all have to have dreams, Ron.
We do. So we're talking with Dr. Elizabeth Clotus, and we're talking about really heart health. I thought, I was looking at cholesterol. We've talked a lot about cholesterol, but it's really about a lot more than cholesterol. And so it sounds like there's certain food products that can help lower cholesterol and reduce risk of heart disease. And these foods, my understanding is, can possibly eliminate the need to take something like a statin or allow you to take a lower dose. Is that fairly accurate?
That's, Yeah, that's correct. You know, some people should be on statins. I mean, once you have heart disease, so you've had a heart attack, stroke, bypass surgery, stent, you really should be on these medications. They've been shown to improve outcomes. But for a lot of people, they're not going on those drugs because they've had an event. They're going on those drugs because they have high cholesterol. Well, high cholesterol is not caused by a deficiency of the right medications. High cholesterol is caused by a deficiency of the right foods. So you know, by adjusting what you eat can have a marked impact on your cholesterol numbers. And, you know, for some individuals, avoid the need for medications altogether. And for others, reduce the amount of medications needed to bring your cholesterol under control. And that's really important because a lot of the side effects and long-term issues related to being on medications for cholesterol lowering is related to dose. So the higher the dose, the higher the risk of complications. So you want to minimize the dose to get you to that cholesterol goal.
And so the step one foods that you're recommending, are actual snack foods like candy bars?
Yeah, you know, this is really about meeting people where they are, you know. Mm-hmm. This is not about trying to turn someone into, you know, a yoga practicing vegan, right? This is really about, like, okay, you typically have, you know, oatmeal or some cereal in the morning. Well, try this instant oatmeal instead. It's got everything needed to get your, you know, to get your metabolism in the right place to help lower cholesterol and manage your blood sugar and also not add sodium so your blood pressure doesn't spike. Same thing in the afternoon. Oh, you normally eat a Snickers bar. Well, try this chocolate bar. It's, you know, it's really good, and it builds health, not disease.
And you really just need, you know, two of those a day.
Two a day. That's it. You don't have to turn your life upside down. That's the magic of this. And you get to see in a month whether you had a response. And if you did, and not everybody does, right? Not everybody has a magic response to food, just like not everybody has a magic response to a particular medication. But it's really easy to test. And if you do, oh my gosh, you just won the lottery. You can build on this. And okay, now maybe add a salad at lunch. See what happens with that. You could end up with very, very low LDL levels just based on what you do yourself. And that's a win. You have the power to change your health.
So if I ate six of them a day, that'd be even better?
even a really great thing you can do too much of. So I think you might regret it. They're high fiber. Serving. So, might backfire on you.
Or at least on those around you.
So these are available at, can I get it at Walmart? That's the only place I shop.
No, they're available online. So you can go to our website, steponefoods.com. You can also find them on Amazon. So amazon.com, just put in Step One Foods and they'll come up there. And they just come straight to your house. It's easy peasy. And
so,
we've done
so there aren't any distributors?
No. Well, I guess Amazon would be considered one, right?
I guess. But, yeah. Are they?
Yeah. No.
And they're not sold through any, like, medical clinics or doctor offices or?
Yeah, you know, as food physicians, you know, don't like to keep a lot of food around, and that makes sense. And you know, honestly, they're busy sampling drugs. I mean, this is part of the problem. Is we
right.
We have a, you know, pill for every ill mentality, and as a result, we miss out on the opportunity to you know, let our bodies heal themselves with the right support.
Mm-hmm. And food is really the answer, it sounds like.
Well, food is medicine. if it's the right food, right? And it can be really, really powerful.
So how long would it take if somebody were to start eating step one foods twice a day?
Mm-hmm.
When should they be checking their LDL again?
Yeah. So literally in 30 days. So they can just do this for a month and do it up until the time of their lab test, right? So mm-hmm. it's not like you do this for, you know, a month and wait 2 weeks and then get your cholesterol test. No, it's kind of like a medication. It's gonna wear off if you're not using it. So eat it up until the time of your lab test, which should be checked fasting for your cholesterol, and then you can see whether you responded or not. It's super easy,
and you'll see a response after 30 days. That quickly.
Wow. Yeah, cholesterol actually responds remarkably fast. So if you sequester people in a lab and control every single morsel of food that they eat, you can see kind of from that dietary intervention in the immediate term, you can see the maximum LDL reduction at 2 weeks. It happens really, really fast. So you can really test this. 1 month is more realistic for something that people are doing not sequestered in a lab. And that's how we did that clinical trial was done. It was done in free living individuals. They were going about their days just, you know, taking in a couple of snacks a day, and we checked their cholesterol before and after. By the way, what's really interesting is it wasn't just that. We also had them do the same thing again using, you know, typical store-bought foods that people think, you know, might be healthy for them. Quaker bars, Quaker granola bars, Bare Naked granola, because there's different products. We have a smoothie mix, so we had people substitute Ensure for that. So it was things that you would think like, oh, this is going to be good for me. Like, these aren't bad things that I'm buying. Cholesterol didn't budge. During those times.
Interesting.
You really have to know what you're doing.
Dr. Clotus, we really appreciate your being on the show. We're posting information about the step1foods.com website on our social media, and we encourage people to go there, even just to read the blogs if you're not looking for
yeah.
food. But
yeah,
thank
and
you.
Then, you know, you mm-hmm. met... Oh, sorry. And just before I go, yeah. you mentioned that you're holding a booklet. So there is a guide for, you know, the different options for cholesterol management. I mean, when I started out from my residency, the only thing we had was statins. Now there's a cornucopia of options, including
right.
food.
And they're all in that information. Available on
they're
the website.
All in there.
Okay. Well, thank
yeah.
you so much. We're going to have to go. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
All right. Sounds good. Take care.
Thanks. You too. And we're coming okay. close to the end of the show. There's just a few seconds left. Quality of Life Radio Show, thank you so much for listening. We're going to be talking with another physician next week. So be here with us at that time, 3:00 Saturday. Thanks and goodbye.